This meeting of the House Education Committee will come to order. Today is Friday, May 10th, 2019, and the time is 8:04. Members present are Co-Chair Harriet Drummond, Representative Hopkins, Representative Reback, Representative Tuck, and myself, Representative Andy Story. We have a quorum to conduct business. Before we begin, I'd like to remind everyone to silence their cell phones. Today, our recording secretary is Selman Holland. Taylor Kelly is our LIO moderator, assisting with the teleconferencing support. Thank you both. I wanted to announce that at 8:55 a.m. this morning, we are going to recess until about 9:30. We have a meeting that we need to go to, so we will continue at around 9:30. Today we will consider three bills: House Bill 109, Military Children's School Residency; House Bill 67, Duties of the Department of Labor; and House Bill 155, Eligibility for the Alaska Performance Scholarship Program. We will also have a brief presentation on reauthorization of the Carl Perkins Act and status report on the State Career and Technical Education Plan, with an opportunity to ask questions on these federal funds that support CTE in Alaska. We will begin with House Bill 109. The committee considered the bill on Wednesday, May 8th, and adopted a House Education Committee substitute. We heard from the sponsor and took testimony from the Department of Defense and the Anchorage School District. We opened public testimony. We set an amendment deadline of Thursday, May 9th at noon, and we received no amendments. This bill has a zero fiscal note. Representative Ledoux's staff, Deneen Tuck, is here today. Do members have any questions for her or any comments on the bill?
Comments, Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Drummond.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this is a good bill. I think it honors the sacrifices that our military families make. It's one of the things that we can do to make their kids welcome and successful in our school. So I think this is a good bill, and I think we should move it out.
Do members have any further comments?
Madam Chair, which version are we looking at in House Bill 109?
We are looking at 3-1 S.
S, okay. I just happen to have A in my packet. And if I may,
yes.
Madam Chair, we heard this in Military and Veterans Affairs Committee. That's where this bill started off. I'm a proud sponsor of this. I'm glad that Representative Ledoux had brought this bill coming forward. This is something that we're trying to do, that the Department of Defense is doing in all 50 states, just making sure that the transition is easy for families when they came in. And the amendments that took place in Military and Veterans Affairs really did clean it up. And really make it a lot simpler and a lot more manageable for those military families. So I want to thank the committee for addressing this and looking at this.
Thank you. Is there any objection to moving the bill out of committee?
No, first I have to move it.
Oh, yes. Representative Drummond, let's move
Madam
that
Chair.
Bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move committee substitute for House Bill 109, Work Draft 31-LS0728. /S from the Education Committee with individual recommendations and zero fiscal note.
Is there any objection to moving the bill out of committee? I see none. CS for House Bill 109, Education, passes from committee. We will sign the paperwork at the end of the meeting today. So I'd now like to take a few moments to learn about the Alaska Career Technical Education Plan and reauthorization of the Carl Perkins Act. You'll find in your packet a two-page document entitled Carl D. Perkins Career and Technical Education Act Reauthorization, provided by the Department of Labor. We have with us representatives from the Department of Education, the Department of Labor, and the University of Alaska. With us today are Deb Riddle with the Department of Education and Early Development, Greg Cashin with the Department of Labor and Workforce Development, and I believe online we have Heidi Teschner from the Department of Education. Thank you. We have Terry Cothran from the University of Alaska and Louise Dean, the Director of the Alaska Workforce Investment Board. I'd like to invite some or all of you to come forward. I'm not sure of the order you're planning to go this morning, but please come forward and introduce yourself and your affiliation for the record, please.
Hi, for the record, my name is Deb Riddle, and I'm with the Department of Education, the Division Operations Manager, and the Administrator for the CTE program.
Good morning, Greg Cashin. I'm the current Technical Education Coordinator with the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development.
Welcome. Thank you for your work.
So I'll go ahead and start. I wanted to kind of give an overview of CTE in Alaska, kind of starting back, actually in the United States. Back in 1917 was the first time funds were awarded for vocational education. It's kind of changed throughout the years. In 1973, it became the Vocational Act. In 1984, at Carl D. Perkins, that's when the name that we're familiar with started. In 1990, they adjusted the title and we reauthorized it to be a Vocation and Applied Technology Act, which was called Perkins III. So you're going to see a pattern coming along. In 1998, it was amended again to be called the Career and Technical Education Act, moving away from that vocational language. That is what we call Perkins III. Then we had in 2006, the most recent one that we've been operating under for several years until it was reauthorized again in 2018 for the Strengthening Career and Technical Education for the 21st Century Act, which we call Perkins V for obvious reasons. Through the course of the change in the Perkins, it has kind of tried to move from the vocational type of the shop class, those types of classes where it was not necessarily considered as rigorous as the core classes. Perkins 4 and Perkins 5 have really tried to bring career and technical education with a STEM focus and really try to create some courses and some programs that are rigorous using an academic focus as well as with the workforce development piece tied into it. You received, I think, from earlier a PowerPoint that was done by the Department of Education, that was Career and Technical Education Department, talking about the levers of CTE, and I thought that was a really powerful presentation. It talks about how CTE really can provide a lever for students who may not be as successful in the core areas but are really looking at, I shouldn't say not successful in the core areas, but are really looking at a career focus, not just necessarily a college focus. I thought that was, I like the levers on that, and I thought they did a really good job about that. So some of the things that we are looking at the department as we move forward with the strengthening, or Perkins 5, I'll just say that, is looking at the changes that have been made. One of the main changes that Perkins 5 we notice is that it's tied to the Every Student Succeeds Act. You'll see language that goes throughout the Perkins 5 that addresses pieces in ESSA, which are the talking about the consultation, really focusing on the academics, providing, looking at accountability in a different way, making it more accessible for different states. In the past, most of the accountability indicators were those targets were determined by the Department of Education and or OCTE is what we call it, and between OCTE and the state. One of the big changes is now that the districts can negotiate within the state to determine our own targets that fit our needs a little bit better. And that was outlined in the outline in the paper that the Department of Labor has done. Some of the things that what we're excited about at the Department of Education are some shifts in those indicators. There are fewer, but we get to choose as a state one of three, which I thought was we can do one or we can do all three, and those are work-based learning, post-secondary credit in attainment, and credential attainment during high school. This really ties into the Alaska Education Challenge that has kind of been driving a lot of the work that we do at the Department of Education. The second goal in that Alaska Education Challenge is using CTE to help raise graduation rate. And there has been a push for work-based learning, which ties in with apprenticeships, And then we have the post-secondary credit, that dual credit, trying to work very closely with the university on how to do that, and then some credential. Those are some certificates so students in high school can earn some industry certifications before they leave high school. The plan also, or the Perkins 5 also offers some new definitions which weren't in Perkins 4. And probably what we're going to talk about today is systems alignment. It really talks about collaboration between the secondary, post-secondary, the workforce, industry partners, and other like parents. It really is offering an opportunity for a really highly collaborative experience for districts and the state in order to provide a CTE program that's going to be work best for our students. And then looking at professional development in a different way, coordinating with not just the CTE professional development, but in integrating those teachers who are teaching the core classes as well. How do we blend those together better? One of the things that we're working on right now is the state plan for Perkins 5. We have two years to come up with a plan. This first year, due on May 24th, we have to submit a transition plan, and that is covering part of the state plan. They kind of divide it into two pieces. So it's the nuts and bolts. How are you going to get the money out the door? How are you going to evaluate programs of study? That's due in May. Due in the next, in April of 2020, we have to talk about, you know, more about the a needs assessment and some more of the conceptual, more philosophical parts of the plan. We have, in order to do that, we have an advisory committee, which Greg is part of, and we have invited Department of Labor, Louise Dean is on it as well. We have industry people, representatives from different unions. We have parents, we have teachers, we have tribal organizations. There's a list that we're required to reach out to, and we have quite a robust advisory committee. We also have a working group, which is comprised of educators, CTE leaders, and teachers to help figure out the nuts and bolts. So the advisory committee helps guide us, look at where we're going and if we're on the right track as far as the vision. The working group is helping with getting the actual work done. What are those documents going to look like, and how is it going to streamline and reduce the burden on the districts? Let's see. So the plan that we're turning in on May talks about the programs of study, which talks about is it welding, is it culinary, what are the components of each one, how does that tie into the academics, and then how are we meeting the needs of special populations, and that would be students with disabilities, students in the non-traditional occupations, so you have male nurses, female truck drivers, foster children. You'll see a lot of the ties between ESSA in this piece right here, the equity piece. And we have to talk about how we're going to allocate the funds, and then talk about the accountability measures that and start looking at the targets that we have to do. In one of the things that I brought with me, and I and
Representative Hopkins.
Sorry. You said thank you very much. Good morning. You said that this ties in with ESSA, the Every Student Succeeds mm-hmm. Act. Have we put forward a plan that's been approved at this point? And I'm sorry if I'm behind on the times. It probably might have happened like 6-8 months ago. But has our ESSA plan been approved and by the government?
Oh, absolutely. It was okay. it was approved last year. We did an amendment this year. Yeah, we had quite a bit of negotiation, but we finally got that done. Yeah.
Thank you. I just hadn't heard that. So excellent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Representative Drummond.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, as long as we're asking questions. Thank you, Ms. Riddle. You mentioned the PowerPoint that by the, I believe it's the Assistant Secretary of Office of Career yeah. Technical and Adult Education. I took a look at that. Almost wish that we had displayed it. I have a question about okay. that. On slide number 6, it just jumped out at me. There's a question that says, and I assume this is addressed to you as the state director of mm-hmm. Perkins, of CTE. How can reserve funds be used to spark innovation and incentivize high quality? And reserve is in quotation marks. Can you explain mm-hmm. what that question means, please?
Right. So in the Perkins funding, it's kind of a complicated formula. But there is what they call a reserve fund. We use our reserve fund a little bit differently than most states in the United States do. Because we have so many districts that are so small, there has to be, when you run it through a formula, they have to meet $15,000 in that formula in order to receive Perkins funds. We have many districts that don't, so we use our reserve funds to get them up to that $15,000 piece so that they can receive the Perkins funds and then be able to offer CTE using Perkins. We use our leadership funds more, I think, in the way that when they talk about innovation, we have offered, these are leadership funds that we can use at the state for a variety of things, professional development. But one of the things that we have been doing is offering incentive grants to programs that have started something that's innovative. One of our first incentive grants went to the Bristol Bay Regional CTE group down in Bristol Bay area. So we have Bristol Bay, Dillingham, Southwest Region and Lincoln Peninsula pool their money together in a collaborative. We gave them, we granted them some money in order to build that up. So we have other ways that we can foster innovation, but we use our reserve grants to help make sure that all districts who want to participate in CTE can.
Great. Just a quick follow-up. So the reserve funds are within the Carl Perkins
yes.
funds. They're not within the larger education budget. Okay. We're very sensitive about those
right.
reserve funds right,
right no,
now.
We try to be very as innovative as we can and try to spread that out. And, you know, most money goes to the districts, and then what do we need to do that we can...
Great. I appreciate that close attention being paid to our smallest districts.
Yes, I have a question too. That was on the page that you're referring to right now about under accountability, and it's saying that we no longer have to report on the individual, the kind of the basic CTE program. I can't remember what we call that.
Participant.
Yes, participant, which we have a lot of students who do that. At least I know we do in the Juneau School District. And just we're only going to be reporting on the concentrators. Do I understand that correctly?
That's through the chair. That is what is required from the – we don't have to do that. We are going to talk about that and see if we still want to do that ourselves. We don't have to stop doing that. But that's a decision that we'll make in conjunction with the advisory committee and the working group. Because it is nice to know how the CTE programs are utilized for those who, you know, we call them dabblers, you know, just trying yeah. something out and participating in CTE class, and that would that helps drive some decisions about programming moving forward.
I agree that it does give us an indication of the interest. So I hope the committee will take that into account, and then I'm also. Moving down to where it says at least 90% of the state determined level performance for any core indicator for all students, how does this affect the CTE programs? That 90% of kids have to, is it be proficient, or what does that refer to?
So those are the students who are participating in the CTE, so the 90%. They set the target, so we have to, when we collect our data, there's the cutoff point is 90%, and that is where the goal that we need to meet for all the students in CTE right now. I think that's I'm not sure which page you're looking at, or maybe that's why I'm confused.
There's a summary handout, Carl D. Perkins okay. Career and Technical Education Reauthorization Act.
And you're talking about the accountability, okay?
Yeah, underneath the accountability. Where it says,
okay,
if a state agency or school district fails to meet at least 90% of the state determined level of performance, 90% of what? When you say state, the
okay,
level
so
of performance, what's
that makes
that?
Sense. So what we have is we have some targets that are determined, and we, you know, we need to meet 90% of that. If a school district doesn't, we try when we work with the. How we have worked with the Department of or with OCTE, and how we will work with the districts. We'll look at those, and we'll make sure that we are setting high enough goals in order for people to attain those goals, but not so high that they're not going to be able to meet them. We want to them to be rigorous but attainable. And so, if a district doesn't meet that 90%, they turn in or that we work with them on an improvement plan, and then we help them figure out a way to raise those marks, and so that they will meet those. But it is based on CTE participants.
Could you give me an example of a goal?
So let's say we have, let we want 86% of our students to have attained technical skills, so to get a certificate. And so whatever, so that's the goal, 89. So whatever 90% of that is, then that would be.
Thank you. Thank you. Please proceed.
Okay, so what I have and is available for you, if Mary has it, is a paper that looks like this. And this is, we do this every year for the state, and we look at some of the statistics. It's very popular because it's easy to use with school boards and with parents. And it talks about where we are in CTE today. Or for last year, we were reporting from the previous year. So we have some demographics, and it talks about how many students are participating in CTE. And you can see the percentage, how many students are female, how many are economically disadvantaged, non-traditional. Those are, once again, those the male nurses and the female truck drivers, the disabilities, and the English learner and migrant students. And then one of the things that we really pay close attention to, and which has kind of made CTE one of our priorities at the department, is the graduation rate. Concentrators, who are students who take 2 years of CTE courses in a rigorous pathway, we have a 95% graduation rate of those students. And so that's really promising. So a concentrator, they're 19% more likely to graduate than their non-CTE counterparts. And so that's, if you have any questions, look at that. On the back page, it shows a six-year trend, and you can see where those numbers are as far as since 2013, how those numbers have changed, gone up and gone down based on the numbers that we receive from the districts.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Ms. Riddle. It's good that the graduation rate of CTE students is rising, but that the percentage of our students that are participating seems to be declining. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, there are a couple. It could be offerings at the specific sites. We'll talk about the Senate Bill 155. We'll talk about that, the APS, later on. There are some just trying to remove some barriers for those students.
Okay. These things are all interrelated. Mm-hmm. Okay, go ahead.
It's House Bill.
House Bill, sorry. I'm nervous.
Any other questions on this handout? I thank you for providing it.
Well, just one last thing. We have 42 districts utilize Perkins funds out of the 54 that we have. So you might be interested in that.
I'm sorry, I missed that.
We have 42 districts who participate, who receive Perkins funds, who apply for and receive Perkins funds out of the 54.
Is there any reason why you feel all districts aren't participating?
The 12 districts who do not participate in Perkins are very small. The offering those programs might be more than what their small schools can handle. So it has to do with the size of the school, and some of the sometimes the Perkins is kind of heavy on the paperwork, and we're trying to reduce that burden on the districts, and sometimes they feel that those federal requirements are a little bit more than what they want to take on.
Thank you. So,
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there room within the Perkins Career and Technical Education Act for the Board of Education to be able to handle the paperwork on behalf of those smaller districts?
So through the chair, one of the things with Perkins, it's an individual. We're trying to reduce as much as we can And we are, for Perkins 5, going to work with the Department of Labor to have to provide some of those studies. They have to do a, in order for their needs assessment, they're going to have to look at a labor market information, and we're going to work with the Department of Labor to where we don't have to do that. We have reduced some of the application pieces. Unfortunately, Perkins requires each of the districts to come up with their own individual plan. We do offer work sessions, and we do offer as much help as we possibly can to help them to get that done. But they do have to have an advisory committee, which is good practice, and talk with about their data. But we do are doing our best to try to help as best we can, because we understand that it is kind of a lot of paperwork.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Cashin, do you want to weigh in to any of this presentation or any points so far?
Not at this time, I don't believe so. We're working, Madam Chair, in cooperation with the Department of Education and University of Alaska on career and technical education planning, Perkins 5 reauthorization, pretty much on a daily basis. So. I don't have any further comments specifically, but I'm available for any questions.
Sure, thank you. And I forgot to ask you to introduce yourself your affiliation for the record.
Greg Cashin, Career and Technical Education Coordinator, Department of Labor and Workforce Development.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I think we're going to be moving on to House Bill 67, Duties of Department of Labor and Workforce Development. But before we get into that completely, I think it's important that we better understand the cooperative work that's been underway to support and advance CT in Alaska. So I've asked representatives from the Department of Education, Department of Labor and Workforce Development, and the University of Alaska to come today and ask each to briefly describe their role in providing CTE to Alaska. So I think what I'd like to do is first turn to the University of Alaska, and feel free to stay where you're seated, and because we'll get to you even shortly. But I believe we have online Paul Layer, Vice President for Academics, Student, and Research at UA. Mr. Layer, are you with us?
Yes, I am, Madam Chair. Can you hear me okay?
I can. Thank you for being with us today. If you could introduce yourself for the record, that would be appreciated.
Thank you very much. My name is Paul Layer, and I am Vice President for Academics, Students, and Research with the University of Alaska. And I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to testify on behalf of House Bill 67. As you all know,
excuse me for a second, Mr. Layer.
Sure.
We appreciated your testimony on April 5th, and we shared your letter with committee members. Today, I'd like you to, before you start on House Bill 167, I'd like you to take a few moments to briefly describe the role of the university in providing career and technical education in Alaska and how you currently interface with your partners, such as DEED and the Department of Labor.
Great. Thank you very much. As you are aware, of course, that the University of Alaska is the largest provider of career and technical education in the state, and we provide those programs both for post-secondary students and through our dual enrollment programs with K-12 students. We work very closely with the Department of Labor and also the Department of Education through our committees. Committee work, and it's been going on for quite a long period of time. And so I'm not exactly sure what more information you want that was provided in our previous testimony. However, we have valued that those collaborations that we have with the departments, and look forward to continuing to serve Alaskans through our career and technical education programs. And so maybe I should just stop there and wait for questions from the committee.
Did anyone have any questions for? Yes, Representative Hopkins.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Hello, Mr. Layer. This is Representative Hopkins. What sort of data do you work with and do you provide to the Department of Labor and Department of Education and Early Development? And what type of data do you provide? How do you disaggregate it and what sort of information do you guys share back and forth?
Thank you, through the chair. Also on the line, I believe I have Terry Cotran, who is our director for our CTE programs, and if she could answer that question, if she could be called upon, I would prefer her to answer that question.
Yes, Ms. Cotran, please introduce yourself and your affiliation for the record, please, and then proceed.
Thank you. I'm Terry Cotran. I'm with the University of Alaska Workforce Programs as a project manager, and I'm based in Anchorage. And regarding data on how we work with Department of Education, Department of Labor, two specific examples, since we're talking today about Perkins, we work through our institutional research office with Department of Education annually to report on post-secondary data related to Perkins to meet the federal requirements. And then we also work with Department of Labor annually to report on the technical vocational education program to meet the requirements for that program and provide that data through an annual report to the legislature. Are there any other questions I can assist with?
Yeah, follow-up.
Yeah, thank you very much. So does that data sharing and that planning and that coordination work throughout the year with the Department of Education, Department of Labor? Is it ongoing or is it more once a year that you guys sit down and work together?
It is ongoing. We actually have a monthly meeting scheduled with Department of Labor Research and Analysis, and there's also an individual that's shared through that office with Department of Education for the Perkins reporting. So we meet monthly to coordinate efforts, and these are two examples of those related to CTE, but there are other reporting efforts that come up as well throughout the year.
Thank you very much. That's all.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you. Mr. Layer, please stay on the line for any further questions that we have, but I'd like to turn back to the Deb Riddles right now with the Department of Education and briefly describe the role of the department in providing career and technical education in Alaska and how you currently interface with your partners such as the University of Alaska and Department of Labor.
Hi, thank you. We are the main source of the Perkins funds. We disseminate those funds to the districts. We provide guidance and information for them to receive those funds and utilize their funds according to what the federal requirements are, as well as promoting CTE within the state. We try to not just only be Perkins. We try to keep our finger on the pulse of what schools are doing. We help coordinate we help districts coordinate with the university system to articulate their programs all the way from the beginning to where they can go right into a program at the university. We sit on the AWIB board. We have a member on the AWIB board, and we participate in several of the committees in order to provide the education perspective to some of those committee meetings. I think that's about it. Well, there's more, but I could go on and on, but I think that's the big one. So.
Okay, Representative Hopkins and then Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just as a frame of reference for me, how much money do we receive in Perkins funds from the feds?
So this last year we received $4.7 million. The preliminary numbers for next year are a little over five. For 25 years before that it was 4.25. We were a minimum allocation state, but there's been additional funds put into that program.
Thank you very much. And then a quick follow-up. How much do you also disseminate state funds on that or work with state GF or any?
There is a match, a $250,000 match. Yeah.
So just over five plus $250,000. Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Drummond.
Yeah, so through all this, it looks like there's already a significant amount of cooperation going on between the Department of Education, Department of Labor, and the University of Alaska. So I know this is not your bill, but I'm just wondering why this bill is necessary. since all this cooperation has been ongoing pretty much through the life of the Carl Perkins grants.
So through the chair, we feel it's really important that we collaborate with everyone. It's a requirement of the Carl Perkins, and I think WIOA also has some requirements that way. We feel it's important that we are able to use the resources and the perspectives of the different entities that work together.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yeah, Representative Tucker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think what House Bill 67 is not just looking at state agencies. I think it's also looking into all career and technical education that is being provided by, whether it's private or public. Am I correct in that?
Through the chair, Representative Tuck, it's just state-funded.
Only state-funded?
Training programs, not private.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. Appreciate that.
Ms. Riddles, with the Perkins funding, it seems that that role is going to all the districts. So would you say that's the primary role you play, is helping the districts with their CTE decisions? Or is it the district's decisions that drive the programs that are developed, the secondary high school school boards, superintendents, communities?
So, Madam Chair, for Perkins, there are it sets a guideline, a standard for a quality CTE program. Not all of the courses that are offered in high schools are CTE funded, but they are. Most of them follow that same framework for the rigorous. There is a we do provide a lot of guidance and assistance that way, but it is local control. They choose what programs they want. There are just requirements that they need to fulfill in order for them to receive the Perkins funding. Does that answer your question?
Sure. Okay, so.
So if I may follow up on my previous question,
Madam Chair, thank you. So in the bill, on page 2, line 11, that new paragraph that's being added, it says, and any other entities involved in providing or funding the programs. And I think when you're talking about programs, you're talking about career and technical education. So what other entities are we looking at?
Through the chair, Representative Tuck, I believe in the last hearing, the department had referenced that we're only looking at state-funded programs, but we'll also coordinate and try to with private entities and attempt to coordinate what career and technical education programs that they provide as well. Although we're not going to have any oversight of any private training entities, if you will. I believe that was referenced in the last hearing.
Was that the first hearing, or was there? I might have missed the
maybe
second
it was
hearing.
The first one. Okay.
The first
yes.
hearing. Okay.
This is our second.
Okay.
So okay. Okay, and I think that's where I think that it helps to know what the intent is.
Right.
I'm not sure that the language reflects that intent entirely. So I think that's the one thing that we got to work on. So that really helps out a lot in knowing what direction we're going. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Representative Drummond.
Yeah, I want to follow up to Representative Tuck's comments. What was referred to, one of the things that was referred to in the first hearing was the fact that the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education already has oversight over the private career training programs throughout the state. And I think that needs to be coordinated with this entire effort, because that pulls in the private piece so that the departments know exactly what's going on in the state in terms of every career and technical education program, whether it's post-secondary or in our public schools. And I'd like to at some point I'll propose an amendment, I think, to the bill in addition to the amendments that Mr. Lehrer of the university has recommended, because we've got all of these incredible ongoing efforts that absolutely need to be coordinated, and I appreciate the effort of the department to unsilo the various efforts and firm it up in the form of the bill. I don't think the bill is going to change what's happening, but I think we need to formalize it and say this is what's going on and this is how we can do it better. So I think to pull in the ACPE would be a really good idea, especially considering that Mr. Joey Crum was the chair of the ACPE for a couple of years, and he runs the Northern Industrial Training Program in Palmer. Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And when I see that in any other entities involved, I think so much of the school districts, but then I don't know if you feel from this line that the Department of Education is the one who really means and school districts too, or would you say in other entities means the school districts? Or are they covered under the Department of Education?
Madam Chair, I would say through the Department of Education.
Okay, thank you. Sure. Representative Tuck.
Okay, just going back on that, and any other entities involved in providing or funding the program. So does that include anybody that would take advantage of our education tax credits by doing any donations? Because that can be considered providing or funding of any of these state programs.
Mm-hmm. Through the chair, Representative Tuck, I'm not sure. I would have to get back with you on that.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Not sure how to answer that.
Yeah. That's a good question and good one to follow up on. So I wanted to make sure, and I know we're moving into the bill, and I was trying to give each department a chance to see about how they coordinate. So, Mr. Cashin, I'd like you to share your role and your sense of collaboration between the university and DEED.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, my role is with the Alaska Workforce Investment Board, which is located in the Commissioner's office with the Department of Labor, but it's the lead state planning and coordinating entity for human resource programs in the state, and its role under statute is responsible for the facilitation and development of an effective employment training and education system, which aligns workforce, education, and economic development. Now, in 2000, the Department of Labor and Workforce Development did not have a career and technical education coordinator until 2009, approximately. And in 2009, the Workforce Investment Board began working with the Department of Education and University of Alaska to develop a statewide career and technical education plan. It was the first one that had been developed, I believe, and the plan called for strategies to improve career and technical education and prepare Alaskans with required skills needed for post-secondary training and careers in high-growth occupations in Alaska. And another role of the Workforce Investment Board is to provide oversight of employment-related education training programs operated by the state and is required to report annually to the legislature on the performance of these training programs, including Carl Perkins, as well as the State Training Employment Program and Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act, or federal funded programs that the department operates as well. So the Workforce Investment Board's role is more of a coordinating entity to get all the different entities together to improve the current technical education in Alaska. And as Ms. Riddle mentioned, the Workforce Investment Board consists of representatives from the Department of Education, University of Alaska, and the Department of Labor, as well as organized labor, education, other public education, post-secondary education, and as well as business and industry. So, and we do meet on a regular basis monthly, and we're also definitely involved with the Perkins 5 reauthorization, and we contribute at the meetings we have every month related to that plan.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Cashin. I think you just described exactly what paragraph 8 is intended to do. It sounds like the Department of Labor is already doing exactly what's in paragraph 8 of the bill through the Workforce Investment Board. So where is that enumerated in statute elsewhere? Because obviously, it already the Workforce Investment Board already exists and has been operating. I'm trying to figure out why we need to say it again in this bill if it's already happening. I mean, it was practically word for word what you said just now. Is what the Workforce Investment Board does and what is being suggested to be placed into statute.
Madam Chair, I believe the new requirements of Perkins 5, the new state plan, requires the Department of Education to consult with the Workforce Investment Board and create further alignment between the Perkins 5 and plan and the Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act state plan as well. Nationwide, states are working to create more synergies between the WIOA state plan and the Perkins 5. In fact, in some states, I know the state of Montana, they're actually submitting a combined state plan that includes both WIOA and Perkins 5. So it's not just an effort that Alaska's working on. It's nationwide. Many states are trying to create more alignment between the current technical education system and the post-secondary education and employment training opportunities.
Follow up. So the missing piece is the coordination with the Department of Education, which it still appears has been ongoing. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, and follow up one more. I think you mentioned an acronym, WILA?
WIOA, Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act. It's the federal act, U.S. Department of Labor, that provides most of the federal funding to the Department of Labor for job training efforts.
Okay, great, thank you.
Yeah. Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Cashin. The Alaska Workforce Investment Board, some of the quotes that you had, is that in statute?
Yeah.
Or is that, okay. I'm actually looking at the general index for all the boards and commissions, and there's pages and pages and pages of them, but I can't find the Workforce Investment Board statutes. Can you share with what titles that it would be?
Through the chair, Representative Tuck, it's AS 2315.
2315. Okay, thank you.
And
I wonder why they don't have it in the table of contents here. It's really weird. Okay, thanks.
Yes, Representative Hopkins.
Thank you very much. The Alaska Workforce Investment Board bylaws are in 2315-550. We were just talking about the Representative Drummond was asking about the coordination with the Department of Education as well, making sure that that's an important part of it. The board makeup says here that the Department of Education sits on the AWIB board. That's correct?
Correct.
Okay, and the Department of Labor does as well, it looks like. So that coordination exists in those monthly meetings or quarterly meetings that AWIB has, and then monthly meetings follow up with the different breakout committees and things like that.
That's correct.
And then, thank you, a quick follow-up as well. And those are separate, I'm guessing, from when Terry Crofton of the university was saying that the university meets to share data and programs and processes with the Department of Labor monthly. Those are separate meetings, correct?
Through the chair, Representative Hopkins, that's correct.
Okay, thank you. And then that person is that data person that the Department of Labor has also shared with the Department of Education, I believe is what she said. Or there's somebody there who is shared addressing data and analytics?
So to the chair, Representative Hopkins, that we meet every month. The data, we have a data person that works with the data person at, we have a data sharing agreement with the University of Alaska.
Okay.
And that's how we get our information.
All right, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much for that. We are going to be taking a recess right now. My plan is to hold the bill we have some more questions on it and more discussions about it. I would like to continue the discussion, and I'm hoping the university can come back online too. As I said, we have many of us have a meeting at 9, and I hope us to be back at 9:30 on the record. And we're going to be taking a recess. But I did want to make a comment that I'm so appreciative to all the partners in the room and all of you for working on this very important part of education and workforce development in Alaska. And I recognize all the work you have been doing together and in bringing the bill forward. It's good to really relook at this again and all the partners that have even been brought up today. And so thank you all. And with that, I'm going to take a recess. Call this meeting of the House of Education back to order at 9:34. Thank you for coming back to the meeting. Appreciate that. I wanted to return our discussion to House Bill 67, Duties of the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. I wanted to first go to Mr. Layer, who is online with the University of Alaska. This has to do with a question about your letter that you had submitted to the board about an impossible amendment to the bill in front of us. If you wanted to make some comments on that.
Thank you again. Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, for the record, Paul Lair, University of Alaska, Vice President for Academic Students and Research. With regard to our letter, I think, I don't think I have very much to add beyond what we have in the letter that we sent to the commissioner on April 8th regarding the use of the word programs. And I think the rationale within the letter is clear. We develop programs, and we have that in place. So we appreciate the commissioners and the department's willingness to entertain those amendments. And so I think that's all I really need to say right now, but I'm happy to answer questions about that. Again, I also want to emphasize that we have, as we talked about earlier, a great working relationship with the departments regarding CTE programs, and our monthly meeting really does work to coordinate and to inform each of our groups about where we are with our programs.
Thank you, Mr. Layer. I just wanted to show members in the bill, your letter said taking out programs and taking out those involved in providing or funding the programs and just put in career and tech programs. That deals with, does the amendment you offer in your letter effectively deal with the issue of monitoring and what that might mean in regulating or guiding what CTE courses are taught in the state? I know we were discussing last time about what's the definition of monitoring, what does that mean? And I'm wondering your thoughts on that.
We do not address the monitoring in our comments. I think, as I've mentioned, as I just mentioned as well, working closely with the department on informing them through our meetings about and looking at some data and doing data analysis has been working very well for us. I think that that coordination for us is the most important part of that.
Okay. At the meeting on April 5th, Commissioner Ledbetter spoke about the need for alignment between jobs and training to be sure we are not training more or less people than the state needs. Do you have any thoughts on how that might work and if that would impact university training programs?
I think that through our coordination meetings, we have addressed that in working with the department. We do help to coordinate an assessment of workforce needs in the state, and because we are part of that conversation, we can very quickly develop and expand, for example, certain programs to meet those needs. And so I think that, again, this collaboration with the workforce reporting has worked very well for us.
Thank you. Does anyone else have any questions for Mr. Leggett? If not, I'd like if someone from DEED, if they could come forward and also answer basically that same question about the issue of monitoring and what impact that would have on DEED programs or what that means to the department.
For the record, Deb Riddle with the Department of Education. As far as monitoring, I understand the intent of this bill is just to kind of keep track of what's going on and help coordinate those efforts. That definition of monitoring works well for us, if the language is a little, if it needs to be changed to reflect the intent of the bill.
Representative Tuck.
Madam Chair, you know, when I look through the Alaska Workforce Investment Board's functions, they're coordinate and plan. So I would like to, I think we should replace coordinate and monitor with coordinate and plan. I think that's really what they want to do, is be able to plan any type of career and technical education that's going on by looking at the Department of Education and Early Development, by looking at the University of Alaska, and by looking at other career and technical entities out there. So I when we look at monitor, I think monitor is just, you know, you're looking at possibly, as we talked about in the first meeting, looking at the ability to audit through monitor, and I don't think that's the intention. So I think coordinate and plan, just to keep consistent, because what I've been hearing is just want to coordinate with the functions of the board of Alaska Workforce Investment is doing, coordinate with them to make sure that we have in statutes the functions of the Department of Labor in reflecting what the Workforce Investment Board is doing as well.
Thank you for those comments. Thank you, Ms. Riddle. I would like to end this part on House Bill 67 with giving the Department of Labor and any comments, anyone here from the Department of Labor, any comments you'd like to make on those questions. And I did have one other question, so if someone could come forward, that'd be great.
And Madam Chair, I do have a conceptual amendment for consideration.
Oh, thank you. We'll get to that. Yes, please proceed. And please introduce yourself for the record again.
For the record, Greg Cashin, current technical education coordinator, Department of Labor and Workforce Development. I also wanted to mention Louise Dean, the executive director of the Alaska Workforce Investment Board, is also online as well. In terms of, I don't think we have any additional testimony. I think we're open to, you know, some of the recommendations to modify the language to, you know, improve the comfort level, I guess, of the committee or the university and other entities.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Yeah, just to make a comment. Thank you. It's clearly there isn't enough time to move this bill beyond this committee at this time in the session, but it's only the first year of a two-year session. And I think we've got a lot of ideas about what needs to be done in terms of amending this bill. But we do have some concerns about if this bill doesn't pass, is that going to create a problem for the department?
Madam Chair, I don't believe so. I mean, we've been, we'll continue working with the Department of Education and University of Alaska and other training providers statewide to promote career and technical education in efficiencies and you know, prepare Alaskans for the available employment opportunities, you know, in the future. So I don't believe it would impact us that much.
It's very clear to me that the cooperation is ongoing, and I congratulate you on that.
Thank you.
Representative Hopkins.
Thank you very much. I guess as we're closing this down as well, I don't know when the chair position is up for election on the AWO board, but I think this entire bill would be problem solved if the director or the commissioner of Department of Labor was elected as the chair for the AWO board. Because the board, in the bylaws of AWIB, it says the board shall act as the lead state planning and coordinating entity for state workforce investment programs, including but not limited to all state laws involving employment, training, career, and technical education and workforce development. So I think that if you guys became chair, I think you could solve the problem with this entire bill.
Thank you. And I'd like to hear Representative Tuck's proposed amendment, just so it's out there to talk about, and then I'd like to move on to the next item of business.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. So what I've been hearing is, and I've had concerns with the term monitor, because that could mean really getting into people's business. And I think that the University of Alaska expressed some concern about that. I don't think that's really in the intent of the Department of Labor. They just want to be able to see what's going on out there and then make necessary adjustments to make sure that we're meeting workforce needs. And so when I looked at the statutes for the Alaska Workforce Investment Board, because I think that's the kind of the entity that the Department of Labor is supporting, they don't use the word, they use the word planning and coordinating. So what I would like to see is I'll talk about what I think needs to be amended, and then I'll read it all in one breath. But page 2, line 9, coordinate and instead of monitor, replace that with plan. And then say state provided career and technical education, because that's where the authority would be or what they would be looking at. And then eliminate programs as recommended by the University of Alaska through a coordinated cooperative effort with Department of Education and Early Development, the University of Alaska, and any other entities involved in, and then take the recommendation again from the University of Alaska, career and technical education. So basically what we're doing is we're allowing the Department of Labor to coordinate and plan future needs in career and technical education by looking at the Department of Education and Early Development, the University of Alaska, and other entities to see what's going on out there. I think that meets the goal. So how it would read, and when we get back to this, is the whole paragraph would read, coordinate and plan state-provided career and technical education through a cooperative effort with the Department of Education and Early Development, the University of Alaska, and other entities involved in career and technical education.
Thank you. Thank you for that. And what we welcome any comments to the committee on that proposed amendment. And it's clear that career and technical education is very important to the state, and I thank all the partners and thank you for bringing this forward.
So thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm now going to turn over the gavel to Representative Drummond.
Quick at ease. Bill 155, eligibility for the Alaska Performance Scholarship by Representative Story. Representative Story and your staff, please introduce yourselves for the record and proceed with a really brief presentation, as we're going to end in a few minutes for a nice ending to our meeting today.
Thank you, Representative Drummond and members of the committee. I'm Andy Story, Rep. Andy Story, District 34 here in Juneau. It's my privilege to bring this today. This bill to you, an act relating to eligibility for the Alaska Performance Scholarship Program. The goal of this House Bill 155 is to give students the opportunity to take career technical education courses that count towards eligibility for the Alaska Performance Scholarship. This has been something I have been thinking about for many years, as I feel students who are interested in this field really do need to have the opportunities to take advantage of the Alaska Performance Scholarship Fund.
All too often, students who desire CTE classes do not have room in their schedules to simultaneously take individual CTE classes or follow a CTE track while still meeting APS eligibility. This is especially true with limited course offerings in small to medium schools and scheduling challenges. House Bill 155 offers greater flexibility for students as they choose courses and recognizes the importance of CTE in student preparation for college, career, apprenticeships, and other post-secondary training opportunities. Financial assistance by APS is vital to many young Alaskans, and it's important that students who choose a path that includes CTE have access to these resources. All students can benefit from CTE, whether college-bound or not. CTE offers valuable skills and a pathway to certification and jobs. With me, I have staff Mary Hockala. She's going to briefly walk you through some information and how that would look. Thank you.
For the record, Mary Hockala, staff to Representative Andy Story. Just want to point out that there's two avenues that the bill includes. If you turn to the chart, Alaska Performance Scholarship chart, if you see the green print, that is something we've added to try to highlight what is proposed in the bill. Under the math science curriculum, there would be under social studies, there are a number of options students have. It would add one more option to that of social studies of one credit of CTE. The second option for a student would be under what's now called social studies and language curriculum. They may wish to change it at some point, but it would be an option of replacing world language 2 credits, which is 2 years or 4 semesters, with 2 credits of CTE. So that would focus a little more on the concentrators, and 1 year of which would be required to be sequentially more rigorous within a clear career cluster. If we go to a chart that was provided by Department of Education, this is looking at career technical education concentrators who basically take, I believe, three or more classes in CTE, I believe is how they typically categorize, but we can get in then comparing it to non-CTE concentrators, the graduation rates. And clearly CTE can play a role in motivating students is what I read when I look at that chart. The next 2 pages, career clusters, it's a printout from the Department of Education, and then a link at their site, which gives you more information about the 16 career clusters. And then the final document is from locally here in Juneau. Career and Tech Ed today looks a lot different than when I was a kid in high school. And I know Representative Story talked about taking a class typing, so did I. And if you look on here, you don't see typing or keyboarding, but you see a whole array of new 21st century career technical education opportunities. So just wanted to share that.
I just wanted to say this is from our high school in the Valley, Thunder Mountain High School, Falcons. And if you just look down on marine biology, digital arts, finance and investing, AP computer science, introduction to computer science, human anatomy, outdoor biology, woods, robotics, work readiness, all very excellent courses that I feel students should be able to get credit for.
And for the record, we do not have a fiscal note yet. It's been requested, and so it will be forthcoming, but we do not have it at this time.
All right. Plenty of time to develop all of those things. Questions for Representative Hopkins? Representative Hopkins first, then Representative Hopkins.
Where was this government and public administration class when I was in high school dealing with revenue and taxation, regulation, management, and administration at the local, state, and federal levels? Where was that?
Thank you for hearing the bill.
Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for bringing this bill forward. When the performance scholarship was debated, I think it was 2012 and 2013, one of the concerns that I had is not having equal opportunities for rural Alaskans to be able to have the classes to be able to take to get into, to be able to apply and receive the Alaska Performance Scholarship. So I was worried that we were going to end up with another Moore versus State type of case just based on having this, not having the courses available for people to be able to meet the requirements. When we look at career and technical education, and you may have heard me say this story before, but I got to say it again. When I was on the school board, I had an attorney call me up, and I wish I can remember his name. I wish I can find a note when he called me, and hopefully he's listening and can eventually call in, because his testimony was very high impact. He talked about how if it wasn't for shop classes in high school, how he would have never taken all the other courses and graduated from high school. And although he never did enter into the trades, he did go on to higher education and become an attorney. And how the skills that he developed in that shop class saves his family all sorts of money because he's able to do stuff on his own. Now, that's kind of a side note. When we can talk about this bill right here, and you look at, you know, no longer having typing, but looking at computer skills, even a shop mechanic has to have a lot of computer skills these days to be able to perform their jobs. And you look at welding, you look at, well, let's look at home ec, you look at the cooking classes that's available. You know, you're dealing with measurements, you're dealing with chemical reactions, you're dealing with diets and how it affects the body and everything else. So there is science there. And it really is, I believe, the career and technical education components of things that really makes education relevant, engaging, and inspiring, because people want to be able to apply what they're learning immediately to the things that they're doing. And so I know that's a long-winded voice of support of what you're doing, but I want to thank you for bringing this forward.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We have, according to my script, we have Stephanie Butler, Executive Director of the Post-Secondary Education Commission, on the phone for testimony, but I don't think we need that right now. Dr. Butler, thank you for hanging in with us, but we will bring you back again. And this session is not over. I think this is a great discussion that we need to continue, and I think we can continue it next week. And since the bill is introduced, we can now deal with it under bills that have already been heard. So let's move on. We will hold this bill, and I look forward to the discussion as we go forward. And we're now going to take a few moments to check in on a few of Alaska's schools.
And if I...
Oh, yes, go ahead.
If I may...
introduce yourself for the record, please.
Yeah, I'm Mary Hockla, staff to Representative Story. We have with us Sam Jordan from the Alaska Staff Development Network, who has graciously offered to click the go button and assembled these clips for the committee, and refocusing back on a fundamental for all of the committee of kids.
Good morning. So Sam Jordan, for the record, and I appreciate being able to do this. It's always great to bring kids back into these discussions. So we have some views from the Lower Kuskokwim School District this morning, Anchorage School District, Southwest Region School District, and the Juneau School District.
Thank you.
What school are we looking at? What gym?
What school district? Lower K. What school district?
What town?
Don't.
Lower Kuskokwim? Here's Juno.
Oh, I met her. I know that young lady. Yeah, student
yeah.
Of the arts.
Yes.
Student art thing.
House build.
Mm-hmm.
Danielle Reha. That's our teacher of the year in the Maine charter school. She's my constituent. Yes, sir. I think it's her.
Safety seal. Do we have one more?
One final.
Okay.
Yeah.
Short.
Hi, everyone. I'm Robin Jones, and I'm the principal of Chief Five in Columbus School. And I'm Megan Redmond, the assistant principal at New Studio Hawk, Alaska. And our students aren't failing. They're actually thriving, inspiring, and deserving of all opportunities. But don't just take our word for it. Who matters?
We matter!
Who matters?
We matter!
Who matters?
We matter!
Yeah, she won. Yeah, National Student Principal of the Year. Wow.
Is that it?
Assistant principal.
Fabulous. That was fabulous. I think we ought to play that at the beginning of every House Education Committee meeting, and we will recommend it to the Senate Education Committee as well. I'm so glad that kids matter, and I'm so glad that we serve on this committee together, and I really appreciate your showing us that. With that, we may have a meeting on Monday. We haven't decided yet, but thank you. And with that, we are adjourned at 10:02 a.m.